brought to you by Penguin.
Under the Net by Iris Murdoch. Read by Samuel West. All of a piece throughout. Thy chase had a beast in view. Thy wars brought nothing about. Thy lovers were all untrue. 'Tis well an old age is out, and time to begin anew. Dryden, The Secular Mask. Chapter 1. When I saw Finn waiting for me at the corner of the street, I knew at once that something had gone wrong. Finn usually waits for me in bed, or leaning up against the side of the door with his eyes closed. Moreover, I'd been delayed by the strike. I hate the journey back to England anyway, and until I've been able to bury my head so deep in dear London that I can forget that I've ever been away, I am inconsolable. So you may imagine how unhappy it makes me to have to cool my heels at Newhaven, waiting for the trains to run again, and with the smell of France still fresh in my nostrils. On this occasion, too, the bottles of cognac which I always smuggle had been taken from me by the customs, so that when closing time came I was utterly abandoned to the torments of a morbid self-scrutiny. The invigorating objectivity of true contemplation is something which a man of my temperament cannot achieve in unfamiliar towns in England, even when he has not also to be worrying about trains. Trains are bad for the nerves at the best of times. What did people have nightmares about before there were trains? So all this being considered, it was an odd thing that Finn should be waiting for me in the road. As soon as I saw Finn, I stopped and put the cases down. They were full of French books and very heavy. I shouted, "Hey!" and Finn came slowly on. He never makes haste. I find it hard to explain to people about Finn. He isn't exactly my servant. He seems often more like my manager. Sometimes I support him, and sometimes he supports me. It depends. It's somehow clear that we aren't equals. His name is Peter O'Finney, but you needn't mind about that, as he's always called Finn, and he's a sort of remote cousin of mine, or so he used to claim, and I never troubled to verify this. But people do get the impression that he is my servant, and I often have this impression too, though it would be hard to say exactly what features of the situation suggest it. Sometimes I think it's just that Finn is a humble and self-effacing person, and so automatically takes second place. When we're short of beds, it's always Finn who sleeps on the floor, and this seems thoroughly natural. It is true that I am always giving Finn orders, but this is because Finn seems not to have many ideas of his own about how to employ his time. Some of my friends think that Finn is cracked, but this is not so. He knows very well indeed what he is about. When Finn came up to me at last, I indicated one of the cases for him to carry, but he did not pick it up. Instead, he sat down on it and looked at me in a melancholy way. I sat down on the other case, and for a little while we were silent. I was tired and reluctant to ask Finn any questions. He would tell all soon enough. He loves trouble, his own or other people's, without discrimination, and what he particularly likes is to break bad news. Finn is rather handsome in a sad, lanky fashion, with straight, drooping, brownish hair and a bony Irish face. He is a head taller than me. I am a short man, but he stoops a little. As he looked at me so sadly, my heart sank. "What is it?" I said at last. "She's thrown us out," said Finn. I could not take this seriously. It was impossible. "Come now," I said kindly to Finn. "What does this really mean?"
"She's thrown us out," said Finn. "Both of us, now, today."
Finn is a carrion crow, but he never tells lies. He never even exaggerates. Yet this was fantastic. "But why?" I asked. "What have we done?"
"It's not what we've done. It's what she's after doing," said Finn. "She's going to get married to a fella."
This was a blow. Yet even as I flinched, I told myself, "Well, why not? I'm a tolerant and fair-minded man." And next moment I was wondering, "Where can we go?"
"But she never told me anything," I said.
"You never asked anything," said Finn.
This was true. During the last year I'd become uninterested in Magdalene's private life. If she goes out and gets herself engaged to some other man, whom had I to thank but myself? "Who is this person?" I asked.
"Some bookie fella," said Finn.
"Is he rich?"
"Yes, he has a car," said Finn.
This was Finn's criterion, and I think at that time it was mine too. "Women give me heart disease."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?